Greetings. Welcome to the Depth of Winter Darkness edition of Stardate Susitna. I'm Kathleen Fleming. The solstice is just past and the days are getting longer by mere seconds at first. In these abundant nights, I have some astro items for you to look for when the skies are clear this week. Starting with the moon. This week, La Luna is a waning gibbous until Wednesday, when it begins the last quarter of its orbit around the Earth, becoming then a waning crescent. The moon passed unseen by observers in the cloudy Susitna Valley, below Regulus of Leo Sunday morning. Look for the half moon to scoot toward Mars Wednesday morning. By Thursday morning, this moon will have already passed below the red planet. This gives you an idea of which star-like object is Mars, the steady reddish one that the moon passes Wednesday and Thursday mornings. The thick crescent will have already passed above Virgo's brightest star, Spica, by the time they rise Friday morning. Then at the end of the week, the crescent moon will be sneaking up on the ringed planet, Saturn, which is in Libra now, rising around 7 a.m. And that's La Luna's social schedule this week, including Mars and Saturn in the morning sky. Right after sunset, which is at 3:30 in the afternoon, you could look in the southwest for brilliant Venus. She angles not far above the horizon for a couple hours after sunset, setting herself about 6 o'clock or earlier, depending on the terrain to your southwest. If you have low horizon lines and are out admiring the deepening twilight at 5 p.m., you could see Venus in the southwest. And 180 degrees away above the opposite horizon, there's Jupiter in the northeast. The two brightest planets on opposite sides of the sky. Interesting. Jupiter has been getting people's attention lately, bright and above the eastern horizon early in the evenings. Being in the northerly zodiac constellation of Gemini, Jupiter, with Gemini, rises in the northeast, is above due east around 9 p.m., swings around to due south by 2 a.m., and is above due west at 7 a.m. The light of dawn overwhelms the giant planet before he sets in the north-northwest. So nice to see Jupiter all the long night long. A fun project is to watch the motion of Jupiter relative to the background stars of Gemini. Gemini includes two bright stars, which represent the heads of Castor and Pollux. They're about half a fist width apart. And then the lesser stars, which make up the lines of the bodies, legs, and feet. Jupiter right now is just outside of a lineup of Pollux and the modest star at his ankle. Keeping an eye on Jupiter over the next couple months, see the planet move up between the twins and then back out again. This retrograde loop is something all the outer planets do, and Jupiter is just about in the middle of his loop-de-loop in Gemini. Guy Otwell likes to include in his annual astronomical calendar information about the equation of time. And this week, Tuesday, the equation of time is zero. That means that clock time and solar time are in sync, something that only happens four times each year. You may recall from previous Stardate Susitna programs that the equation of time is the difference between the constant pace of clock time and the inconstant pace of sun time, a difference explained basically by the Earth's elliptical orbit. Anyway, on Tuesday, the sun crosses any time zone's standard meridian precisely at clock noon. For the KTNA listening area and the longitude of the greatest populations in Alaska, the sun will cross our meridian above due south this Tuesday at precisely 1 o'clock. The reason it's not 12 o'clock is because we live a full hour of Earth rotation, 15 degrees, west of the standard meridian for our time zone. Noon is truly high noon only in Juneau and only during the winter. Well, like Guy, I think it's interesting, so I include this info in my program too. Comets. This astronomical calendar that I use as a primary resource is printed a month or so before the year it is for. So, more than 1 year ago, astronomers were anticipating a great show from Comet Ison, which ended up fizzling after its Thanksgiving Day very close approach to the sun. The notation in the calendar for Thursday the 26th states that Comet Ison will be nearest to the Earth this Thursday. But this fact is no longer significant. Ison is a scientifically interesting ghost. Another comet has been reliable, easily visible through binoculars, if you know where to look. Comet Lovejoy is now very close to the modest star to the lower left of the lower left star that is part of the Keystone of Hercules. When this edition of Stardate Susitna is added to the KTNA webpage, I'll try to include a link to the Heavens-Above website where I like to get my comet viewing charts. Comet Lovejoy should be visible around 7 or 8 p.m., then it'll dip below the northern horizon until about 4 a.m. Check it out, a fuzzy patch with a tail. If you celebrate Christmas, you may enjoy the fact that a cross made of stars stands upright above the western horizon in the early evenings, around 7 p.m. The Northern Cross is part of Cygnus the Swan. And as for the possible astronomical explanation of the Christmas star viewed by the wise men of the East, may I suggest that you do a bit of internet research yourself. The website space.com has a great article that explores four possibilities and discounts three of them: the comet theory, fireball theory, and the supernova theory. A fireball, super bright meteor, wouldn't last long enough for the wise men to follow night after night. A bright comet or supernova certainly would have been recorded by observers in other countries. The Chinese, in particular, were meticulous recorders of sky events. And by the way, congratulations go out to the Chinese for their lunar landing in Sinus Iridium. Anyway, the most likely candidate for the Star of Bethlehem is a conjunction of planets, back then called wandering stars. Planets that were astrologically significant to the House of Judah in a constellation astrologically significant to the Israelites. Jupiter and Saturn had a rare triple conjunction in the year 7 BC, and the two brightest planets, Venus and Jupiter, were extremely close in Leo during August of 3 BC. Well, the Bible says that the Magi visited Herod shortly before his death. And historians tell us that Herod died sometime between 4 BC and 1 BC. So the new star or planetary conjunction that the wise men, guided by astrology, that what they saw had to have been around that time frame, BC. Planetariums do programs searching for a special astronomical occurrence that would have been significant to the astrologers of the day sometime between 7 and 1 BC. Perhaps it was the unusual triple conjunction of Saturn and Jupiter. Maybe the super close pairing of brilliant Venus and Jupiter. Or maybe it was a miracle. But science can't examine that possibility. Do your own research. It's an interesting topic. And I'll end it there. Clearing skies in our near future and aurora forecast climbs to level 3 by midweek. That gives Talkeetna the possibility of northern lights overhead and to the northeast. Look for Comet Lovejoy through binos, there to the lower left of the Keystone in constellation Hercules. Enjoy the waning moon as she passes Mars Wednesday morning and nears Saturn Saturday morning. Venus becomes visible after sunset in the southwest, and the Northern Cross stands upright in the west around 7 p.m. You'll be hearing from another contributor to the Earth and Beyond series next week. From me, happy holidays, best wishes for the new year, and keep looking up.